statement to this important hearing. The delegation is led by the Acting National Commissioner Standa. I want to believe that we now know each other, but it will be proper that as we speak, we introduce our delegation. I really want to extend our sincere sympathy to the families of those police who we are from time to time learn that they are killed by criminals and thugs as they perform their duties. We also, like I indicated in our previous meeting, extend our sincere sympathy to Olga Getane's family. And of course, we wish those that were injured to recover speedily. We have in our minds that one day South Africa will be safe, that it will take, in fact, it will not be easy for a human being to think that killing another human being is something that just can happen like that, that at some stage we will value people's lives and will respect them. For me, it's not just about the work of police or anybody for that matter. I think this goes deep to our moral values as communities. If you think about killing somebody, even in an accident, you should shiver. You don't want at any stage to be involved in a car accident where, as you drive that car, somebody dies. But it would seem like for other people it is easy just to kill a person who is supposed to protect us. I think this is a worrying feature. I further want to say something about the department, to congratulate the department. For over a period of 5 years, receiving an unqualified audit opinion. I think from an unqualified audit opinion with matters of emphasis, this time you got just a clean audit opinion without even matters of emphasis. We believe that you are able to do that because you have systems that are in place that make the auditors to give you this clean report. For other departments, this is a pipe dream. But that you are where you are today, it means you must have worked very hard. It doesn't happen on its own. There surely are people responsible for that. And it takes somebody prepared to do it anyway. From the side of the Portfolio Committee, I think it is important to extend this appreciation and to actually say to the department, you may improve from this. There surely will be some issues that we will still ask questions on with regards to the Auditor General's report, but I think it is important to appreciate this clean report from the department. We also are looking forward to a situation where you will even improve on your performance audit opinion, because I think that is where you are lagging behind. But that you are able to have this, on finance issues, it means you can have it even on your performance audit report. This is what I want to say as my opening remarks. We are hoping that you've prepared yourself for an interaction with the Portfolio Committee. ours is to hold you accountable. And we will definitely do that. We will make you to account for the money that we approved as Parliament when we approved your budget last year. And we will want to know as to what and how you have used that. We will definitely be wanting to know as to how your outcomes are like, whether they talk to how you're utilizing your money or accounting for your funds. But I think it is important that we appreciate that which is good, because indeed, like I've indicated, some departments will not achieve what you have achieved even, I think, in 10 years to come. Let me allow members to introduce themselves, because it is always proper that members introduce themselves. I am Cindy Chikunga. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee, and I'm a woman.
I'm Annelies van Wyk, member of this committee, African National Congress.
And Diane Kerr-Barnard, also a member and from the Democratic Alliance.
I'm Debbie Schaefer, from the Democratic Alliance.
Ekiti Moliwazi, member of the committee and a member of the ANC.
Kenneth Mishra, a member of the ACDP and a member of this committee.
Lekheto, a member of this committee, from the ANC. This member must try and find his own mic because it will have a problem.
Ika Madangu Vela Polandovo, member of the ISD, member of this committee. Thank you.
Thank you very much, members. Commissioner Stander will introduce her delegation as when she speaks. We will take presentation from the department. There has been a request that they present both administration services and, I mean, program as well as the visible policing program. Then we take questions after that. We will see if it is going to work, and therefore it is allowed, but we can always review it if we think it's not working. Let me then hand over to Commissioner Stander. Jeremy, I don't know whether there are any apologies. Okay, we don't have any apologies so far, so we're expecting all members to be here.
Chairperson, good morning, and good morning to all the honorable members. In terms of your opening remarks, Chairperson, we also support the issue of the condolences that you have already extended to our members as well as to Johanna Gekana. Safe to say that the Minister and myself also visited these families during the course of the week to express our condolences in this regard. Chairperson, and then also we can assure you from SAPS's side that we will continue to strive to improve our performance in terms of service delivery to the community out there. And as you rightfully indicated, that we've put mechanisms in place to monitor our own performance in the organization, and there is some areas that we still can improve a lot on, and we will continue to do that. Chairperson, without any further ado, I'm going to ask the members to introduce themselves, starting with me. I'm Martha Stander, Deputy National Commissioner. And then I will also, when we do the presentations, it will be done by Commissioner Patlani, Commissioner Lamour, and Commissioner Skitter will deal with the financial statements. Then I will ask every member to introduce themselves quickly. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Deputy National Commissioner Shaler.
I'm
Morning, Chairperson. Divisional Commissioner Lamour, Head of Visible Policing.
Good morning, Chairperson. I'm Assistant Commissioner Leah Mufume from Supply Chain Management.
Morning, Chairperson. I'm Divisional Commissioner Swilda from Supply Chain Management. Thank you.
Morning, Chair. I'm Gail Cruz, the Divisional Commissioner Training.
Morning, Chair. I'm Assistant Commissioner Moorcroft, Head of Strategic Management.
Systems Management.
My apologies. I'm Assistant Commissioner Ndaba from Career Management.
I'm Stephen Skipper from Finance and Administration.
Good morning, Chair. Pashani, the Divisional Commissioner of Personal Services.
Kevin Stein, support.
Honor, Ms. Commissioner Standard, I've not seen anybody introducing the public service coming from the department. Is it not part of administration program?
This is part of the administration program. We had a long discussion yesterday about whether we should bring somebody from legal services. There's just one portion in terms of the annual report which is relevant to no claims, what is that part of the civil claims? Thanks for that. And we had a long discussion with Commissioner Simkulu and her personnel, and we are most probably in a position to respond on the issues relevant to their environment.
Chairperson, with all due respect, I think it's absolutely unacceptable. I also see there's nobody, well, there's somebody from career management, but the divisional commissioner is not here. I think at least the divisional commissioners should be present. It's not only the issue of litigation, it's also the issue of discipline and the involvement of legal services in that. It's also the issue of things that are being said in terms of real-time following of cases, all those issues that we want detail of, and we're not going to get detail. And we want the people responsible for the divisions to be here. And I think we must register, and if necessary, chairperson, then legal services must come with one of the other groups when we are dealing with them, one of the other programs when we are dealing with them. But this is unacceptable.
Yes, Madam Chair, I think Mtumkulu has got a lot of questions that need to be answered, and I think it's her responsibility. She should be here to answer those questions. There are a huge number of claims against the department. There are a lot of serious allegations against the department, and she should be here to answer those.
Jefferson, I've taken note of that. We have to reappear before the committee on Tuesday. If there is a need, we can arrange that Commissioner Mtumkulu be here. Commissioner Swe is with the National Commissioner. They will only be back during the course of the day from Singapore. So, unfortunately, she could not be here this morning.
I hear that and we accept that, but I think you did ask for apologies in the beginning of the meeting. And I think that should have been raised as well.
Let me just say. I indicated, but it was from me. I want to believe that we are going to get apologies because I'm aware that even the National Commissioner is not here, he's overseas. But surely we will get those apologies from the department as well. I think so. But what we are saying is that we want the legal unit to come here next week so that it can account. Not anybody else, but the unit, any person in charge of the unit.
Jefferson, thank you. Just apologies from our side, from the National Commissioner. We will be here next week. Commissioner Mdluli, who is overseeing the crime stats, but we have a representative from the crime statistics environment in this case. We also have an apology for Commissioner Swee, which is part of Program 1. And then we also have an apology for Deputy National Commissioner Price. Unfortunately, he was with the doctor yesterday. He cannot be here today. And we will make sure that legal services is here next week. Thank you. Substitute and continue the presentation now.
Thank you,
Chairperson. I'm going to ask Commissioner Paslani to start, and then Commissioner Namur and Commissioner Skitter will follow.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. I'm going to do the presentation. Colleagues are here to answer questions on areas relevant to their respective areas of responsibility. This presentation is primarily going to focus on the annual report and financial statements for the 2008-2009 financial year for the Department of Police. It's expected of us as departments to have a plan, but also an annual report after completion of a financial year, Section 40 and 65. Of the Public Finance Management Act will speak to this. The report that we are going to table is for the year end closure, 31st March 2009, which has commenced the 1st of April 2008. We will speak to the subsequent compilation of the annual report on performance of departments, also taking into consideration the previous estimate, national expenditure and the strategic plan, which are reported on backward looking. So this is primarily going to be what is it that the department did and achieved in the financial year 2008-2009. The annual report consists of general information, program performance, the report of audit committee, annual financial statements and human resource management information. It was expected that the report be tabled by the minister before the 30th of September 2009, which was done, I think, somewhere around the 22nd of September. In terms of the service delivery achievement, the focus will be on financial and organizational performance as reflected in annual reports for the 2008-2009, performance indicators developed and indicated together with performance targets, including actual performance in achieving output targets based on that plan that was approved. Okay, I'll focus myself solely on the program one, which is administration services. In terms of priorities in this program, the first focus will be human resource management and up there to inform staffing of personnel by developing and maintaining an annual HR plan for the 2008 financial year. The target, Chair, was to ensure that a plan is developed, an HR plan is developed for the financial year by the end of May 2008, and the actual performance is that the annual HR plan for that financial year was finalized by 2008-09-30 and was formally approved on 2008-10-15. The second priority area, ensuring continued implementation and or maintenance of employment equity within the service. The target being maintained employment equity ratios of 75-25. We are making visible the actual performance, which is the breakdown in terms of race, that the service in the previous financial year comprised of 14% of white, 10.7% colored, 2.8% Indian and 72.5% black, and in terms of gender distribution, 69% male and 31% female. The next priority area in that area, optimizing personnel utilization by entrenching performance management system, the target being to maintain 95% of employees utilized, 95% of employees utilize the performance management system. Actual performance is that performance enhancement process, PEP, is in place. The compliance rate for levels 1 to 12 in relation to planning were at 99.2%, and for the first written appraisal was at 95.5%. At senior management level, the compliance rate for salary levels 13 and above in relation to performance agreement was at 100%, and for the first written assessment was at 98.7%. Continuing program one, human resource management, developing human resources as another priority area. The first target being 80% of operational training provided in terms of the training provisioning plan. Here you'll see the 90% in bracket was the initial target, which was revised during the year. Achievement in that regard, 86.8%, 137,780 members attended operational training, and 119,608 members competently completed the training. In terms of support training, the target was 80% of support training provided in terms of the training provisioning plan. Actual performance is 95%, which is 15,865 members who attended the support training and 15,064 members competently completed the training. In terms of management and leadership development, 80% was the target, moved from the initial 90%. The training provided in terms of the training provisioning plan, there the actual performance is 94.1%. 5,992 members attended management and leadership development training, and 5,640 members competently completed the training. Entry level, that is recruits, 90% of entry level training provided in terms of the plan as a target. 99.7% is the actual performance. 19,853 members attended entry-level training, and 19,801 members competently completed their training. Next priority, institutionalizing a professional service ethos. The target being finalized 70% of reported disciplinary cases within 60 calendar days in terms of the new regulations, that is the 2006 regulations only. The actual performance finalized 42% of outstanding cases in terms of disciplinary regulations 2006, carried over from the financial year before that, the 519 cases received in the 2008-2009 financial year, 3,125 cases finalized in the 2008-2009 financial year, 3,187. Outstanding as on 2009-03-31, it's 457. Next priority area, reduction of civil claims instituted against the service. The target being decreased by 5% the ratio of number of successful civil claims versus personnel strength of the service to be measured over the next 3 to 5 years. The actual performance, The following updated figures are available, which provide an indication of the status of this target. Focusing at the bottom, the financial year under review, the ratio being 1:102, which is 1:77% of claims finalized. Going the financial year before that, 1:62, 6.41% of claims finalized. For 2006-2007, 1:58 and 17.17% of claims finalized. And in the 2005-2006, 1:75, which is 36.62% of claims finalized. And then the 2004, 1:75, 55.30 of claims finalized. Next area, optimizing the occupational health and wellness of employees. The target is to provide support in 100% of instances where requests for support were received from members and their families. This is more reactive part, and 100% response or support to request received for support. In that case, there was 17,281 response provided. expose 30% of SAP's employees' establishment to proactive EAS interventions. Actual performance is 37%. Coverage, which is 65,059 of SAP's personnel establishment, was exposed to proactive EAS interventions. The next one, reorganizing the service to enhance service delivery. The target was to finalize organizational structures, functional analysis, and post structures for all divisions, provinces, and stations by the end of March 2009. The actual performance was station and cluster structures were finalized, and enabling structures for provincial and national levels were finalized for 2008-2009. Last, budget and resource management priority there being optimizing the balance between personnel and operational expenditure. And the target was to maintain an expenditure ratio at 73 to 27 for compensation versus operational expenditure, and the actual performance is 73%, 27% split. Optimizing the application of physical resources to be benchmarked over the next 2 years, because of it being a new focus area, the actual in terms of the capital works, there are new police stations completed. One is Kuma in Stilfontein, and re-established police stations that were completed during the financial year, Debeneck in the Eastern Cape, Kaza, KwaZulu-Natal, Kagiso, Gauteng, Pan East in the Western Cape, as well as Saldanha in the Western Cape. In terms of asset management, firearms, 264,208, and the bulletproof vests issued, 179,183, for males, 154,114, for female, 25,069. Not issued, in other words, in stores at that point, at the end of the financial year for males, was 11,377, female, 7,001, in transfer, 2,501, in transito, 861. The total bulletproof target will be 200,923. In terms of vehicles, 41,900 vehicles in 2008-2009 financial year compared to 40,509 in 2007-2008. 7,350 vehicles were purchased and delivered. 5,457 vehicles were boarded and 798 of them dormant. Improving service delivery by implementation of a service delivery improvement program, including the developing and implementing of service delivery improvement plans and service delivery charters, the target being established SDIPs and service delivery charters at all divisional and provincial offices and 169 high contact crime stations by the end of the financial year. Divisions, actual performance, SDIP and service delivery charters are in place at province as well as at the station level. Risk management, the priority was the implementation of risk management, target establishment of risk management at all divisional and provincial offices and the 169 high contact crime stations by 2009-03-31. An instruction was sent to implement risk management. Risk assessments were conducted at national and provincial levels. Risk registers were compiled and risk cascaded to the performance agreements of divisional and provincial commissioners and risk owners. The implementation of risk management was included in the generic performance agreements of provincial commissioners. The National Risk Committee decided that risk management will not be applied at station level at this stage. It's important to note that this priority has been included under this financial year, but is applicable to all financial programs and sub-programs. Implementation of corruption and fraud prevention as a priority. The target integration of the corruption and fraud prevention plan into operational plans at all levels by March 2009. Actual performance is the implementation of the fraud and corruption plan was included in all the performance agreements of divisional commissioners, national components, and provincial commissioners and station commissioners. In terms of cases, the target was to be benchmarked in 2008-2009 because of its inclusion in the plan during that year. Actual performance number of disciplinary cases or charges, 252. Employees suspended with salary were 16. Employees suspended without salary, 124. Employees not suspended, 113. Total establishment of the SAPS was 182,754 at the end of the financial year. This brings to an end the presentation on the part of administration.
Thanks, Chair. Program 2, visible policing. If you look at the number of partnerships to prevent contact and property-related crime, and there we talk about initiatives within the 169 high crime contact stations. The partnerships that we refer to is partnership between Prime Media Group and SAPS, and that partnership is where members of the public can blow the whistle on crime. It started on the 6th of the 6th, 2007, and on the 14th of May this year, we had 758 arrests already. Currently, the amount of arrests stands on 828 arrests, and the confiscated goods is in the vicinity of 31 million rand already. In a partnership between ourselves and Business Against Crime, and especially with the following focus areas, the Criminal Justice Review, the Violent Organized Crime Reduction Program, and the Non-Ferrous Metal Theft Reduction Program. and various community-based crime prevention projects continue within the Integrated Sustainable Rural Development Program and Urban Renewal Program. Different nodes, which include crime prevention through environmental design, youth and crime prevention program, capacity building programs, and local government initiatives, is all included in that. The National Community Policing Consultative Forum that represents all the 1,116 police stations, the community police forums, have various initiatives to support the objectives of the community police forums in the country. A national tourism safety and awareness strategy was developed by the Department of Environmental Affairs and Tourism in consultation with various key role players, including the South African Police Service, to deal with tourism safety in South Africa, especially in mind with the 2010 Soccer World Cup. If we look at the number of police action for contact crimes, property-related crimes, and crimes dependent on police action, the action undertaken at all 169 high crime contact stations and also other stations. We look at 42,601 roadblocks in comparison with the previous financial year of 35,003 roadblocks. 1,006,186 stop and search operations, that is your moving roadblocks, in comparison with the 842,000 plus minus for the previous financial year. The arrested persons for that period of time is 1,223,505, of which 47% happened within the boundaries of the high crime contact stations. The recovery of stolen and lost firearms, our targets were set on 85%, and as you can see there, that we achieved that with 106%. And just to qualify that, Madam Chair, is the issue that some of these firearms were stolen in previous financial years, and we recovered it in that specific financial year. So we will always have that extra in the specific financial year. The recovery of stolen vehicles is 46%, and we achieved that target. But I just need to qualify this point also, is that 46% is what we can identify as stolen vehicles with a serial number, a chassis number. We must remember that we have a lot of chop shops that vehicles have been totally destroyed and that has been sold. And that is why in the previous presentation I made the issue that we have to look at legislation to micro-dot all vehicles, new vehicles sold, because that will help us a lot. What we already have done, Madam Chair, is that we sent to all the 1,116 police stations micro-dot equipment, just to check the equipment within the SAP 13 already. One of the companies assist us there, so we can have a look and see if we can identify some of these vehicles. Currently, there's only two companies, manufacturing companies, that micro-dot all their vehicles. The rest really becomes a serious problem for us. On the issue of drugs, and as you can see there, is all the different numbers of drugs. This drug exclude the drugs confiscated in the ports of entry, and that is Program 5. Commissioner Shabalala on Tuesday will then give that feedback on that one. If we come to the sector policing side, with the previous financial year, we're talking about 129 police stations what they were implemented, and as you all know, that we approved the policy document on the 13th of July this year. And already the current status is 134 of the current 169 police stations, sector policing is implemented. We also issued as a directive to all police stations that within the next 3 years, all police stations in the country, sector policing must be implemented. There is certain timelines. I have the timelines with me if you are interested in the timelines. Then the reduction of contact crimes. As you can see, in comparison with the previous financial year, murder minus 1.8%, attempted murder 2.6%, sexual offences increase of 12%, and as you know that the new Sexual Offences Act came into being on the 16th of December 2007, and I think by the end of this financial year we will be able to compare the 2 years with one another more accurately. Assault GBH minus 3%, common assault minus 2.6%, robbery aggravated, of course, that is one of our major problems, to an increase of 2.6%, and common robberies a minus 8.9%. When you move on to escapes within police from police custody, this specific financial year there was an 719 incidents of escaping, of which 1,144 people escaped from police custody, in comparison with the previous financial year of 664 incidents, during which 980 people escaped. Attacks on police officers, 629 attacks on police members, in comparison with the previous financial year of 454 in the 2007-2008. And we have to keep in mind that there was an increase of plus minus 10,000 members of the South African Police Service. The killing of our police officers reduced by 2 with the previous financial year. And then the acts against farming communities, we had 794 attacks on farm small holdings and plots, which resulted into 86 murders that were committed. When we talk about the borderline environment, and as we can see, there is the successes, 265 illegal firearms, 530 vehicles recovered, 174,270 kilos of cannabis, illegal goods to the value of 45 million rand, and 50,919 people arrested for various crimes. But what is significant is that 47,198 were arrested at the Limpopo borderline. Your medium risk operation that includes your public order policing and your national intervention unit, there were 743 crowd-related interventions, which led to almost 2,000 arrests in comparison with the previous financial year. There were 447 interventions where we were escorting dangerous criminals. That excludes also the responsibility of protection and security. And there were 302 interventions with major events, soccer events, sporting events, and so forth. And with the special task force, the last bullet point, there were 230 interventions such as hostage situation, combating urban and rural terror, and assistance for the protection of very important people in comparison with the previous year of 184. Thanks, Madam Chair.
Jefferson, thank you. Commissioner Skitter will now do the financial part. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We're now getting to the financial part, and as you see on the screen, the first slide reflects the audit opinions in the last five financial years since 2004-05. It has already been indicated by the Chairperson that they all reflect unqualified audit opinions. Previously, there were also some other matters. Firstly, emphasis of matters, then ordinary other matters, and now it's basically clean except for performance information side, which is not part of the financial statements per se, but obviously part of the audit opinion, especially in time to come in 2009-2010. We had previously certain challenges with respect to firearms, vehicles, and even cabs and dockets. But to a large extent, they have been resolved, especially in the firearms side. The dot pin technology, as well as the SAPS star logo marking, have been brought into the equation. In terms of the vehicle side, the well-known AVL situation has been attended to, and so forth. If we then move to the next slide, it's basically to say what should be looking for. Now, obviously, it's in the eye of the beholder, but there are many criteria that one can look at. The first is the quality is the audit opinion. The second one, as we say, let's have a look at information about the sources and the allocation of financial resources. Let's have a look at the performance of SAPS in the use of their financial resources compared to the planned resource utilization. Then we also say whether resources were used in accordance with a legally adopted budget. as provided by yourselves, in other words, Parliament, including financial limits established by appropriate legislative authorities. And then we look at a few itemized spending priorities to say, did we indeed buy certain products or categories of products. So we shall try to demonstrate compliance to these criteria in the slides to come. Now, in the past, I think in 2007, we also had a discussion on the so-called shifting of funds or virement of funds. It is probably just most appropriate to look at the framework guiding virement. It's section 43 of the PFMA, which says an accounting officer must authorize the shifting of funds between programs or main divisions. It's another word for programs within a vote. It may not exceed 8% of the appropriated amount per program, and the Treasury regulations provide for the augmentation of capital expenditure and to shift savings in compensation expenditure to other expenditure categories. Please note that one cannot increase compensation expenditures, but you may decrease it. One cannot decrease capital expenditures, but you may increase it. Those are merely the technical aspects. Now we get to the next slide, the financial performance, and what we say is demonstrated in the slideshow. Firstly, we say to ourselves, did we in fact utilize our appropriated or voted amount? We say yes, we did use the full utilization of the voted funds. In 06-07 it was less than 1,000, in 07-08 it was less than 1,000, and in 08-09 it was also less than 1,000, 20 rand and 16 cents. We have a small surplus, so that is the first criterion that we say we have complied with, but it's a very broad overall kind of criterion. That's the first one. The second one then, in conjunction with the previous slide number 29, you must just remember, we say the performance against the budget. And the virement for all programs well within the 8% PFMA threshold, the variances are quite small. It might very well be that members of the committee also say that if you have a 7% variance, it's still compliant with legislation, but it might be too big. So we say let's have a look at what has been, and we will do it in the next slide when we do the appropriation statement. At this point in time, we say the variances are quite small. And then we say the itemized spending priorities referred to in the 2008-09 State of the Nation Address, the medium-term budget policy statement, budget speech, and 2008 E&E, and we refer to the objectives accomplished in terms of these specific items, such as personnel target ranges and capacity building initiatives. And then we look at the spending variance in terms of the whole compensation environment and see how close did we get to compensation, the amount that we set aside for compensation, because it has also been debated previously, I think 2007, in this committee. It stands currently at 06-07. Kevin, can you just please go to the next slide, because that's basically the variance slide. Now, if we look at this slide, one will note the following. It's an appropriation statement, basically containing programs and indicating variances between budgeted costs and comparable actual costs in the same period, and the purpose is a variance analysis. Now, as already indicated, the variances are quite small, but let's have a look at them. And may I just go line by line with some of the members. If we look at Program 1, that's administration. From the actual expenditure in the previous financial year to the actual expenditure, or in 07-08, to the actual expenditure in the previous financial year reflects 15% increase. If we look at visible policing, the actual expenditure from 15.3 billion to 17 billion in the previous financial year reflects 12%. If we look at detective services, one will see that the expenditure from 5.9 billion to 6.7 billion reflects 13.5%. Crime intelligence, 10.83% from the actual expenditure in a prior financial year 07-08 to 08-09, and protection and security services with the establishment and the increase in railway policing as well as ports of entry, one will then see an increase of 29.12%. So there were quite some real growth and significant increases year on year between those. Now we get to the variances. If we look at the variances on your right-hand side, that column on the right-hand side, ladies and gentlemen, you will remember that in previous years we said it must be as small as possible. We tried to get it as close as to 100%. Now, whether when one will get it absolutely 100% in all line items is highly unlikely, but nevertheless, one should never say never. We're trying to do so. If we look at program one, there was a 0.85% deviation. I just see that in the last financial year, and I don't think last year we had a legislative oversight because there was elections and things going on. So our last one was 2007, not 2008. But in 2007, that was 1.39%. So we brought it down to 0.85%. Last year, the second one was 2.37%. This year, it's 0.58%. Then the third one, which is 1.07%, last year it was 2.97%. And then the fourth one, Program 4, Crime Intelligence, last year was 1.15%, is now 0.59%. And then the fifth one, Protection Security Services, last year was 1.79% and is now 3.51%, so that's a bit up. The reason being is, but what do we in fact say? We say, in fact, that there were real growth increases, and we also put to this committee that the variances are very, very small. Normally, your concern about this kind of thing is, did you, in your whole virement exercise, did you take away from priority, so to speak, in this regard? The variances are so small, it's in monetary terms, Program 1, 117 million, Program 2 was 99 million, Detective Services was 71 million more, Crime Intelligence 8.5 million less, and then Protection Security Services 80.62 million less. We will get to the reasons just now, but from a statistical point of view, this is the first indication that we would like to give to the committee. Kevin, next one, please. Now, it was also in the past a request that we elaborate a little bit more on Program 1, on the whole administration exercise, because it consists of a number of programs. Members will see the Deputy Minister, which is basically the Deputy Minister's Minister's salary, Deputy Minister's salary management, and then corporate services containing a lot of aspects in terms of organizational functional classification, such as training, such as crime, financial services, auxiliary services, such as legal services, such as IT, and such as career management. Then also property management in this regard. The secretariat, and that was always a point of contention previously, falls within the sub-program management. And it is believed that the secretariat will do their own presentation in time to come, because they are being run as an independent cost center where they get their allocation according to what they want and they take their own decisions. There was also interaction with a newly appointed secretary, and she's indicated that she will also present to this committee, I think it's somewhere next week, if I believe. The next one, please. If we get to the actuals, members will immediately note that the actual expenditures were quite significant increases. There are basically three that I would like to indicate to members, which are not just merely services. Remember, the Program 1 administration is not just admin as admin should be. It is a support program to the other programs. One would get your training, all the training expenses of members in other programs, such as detective services, such as crime prevention, such as protection services, is also vesting here. The same with information technology, and the same with all the whole building environment where new capital works, where you have leases, where you have municipal services, we have planned maintenance and so forth, and then basically the other staff functions as we know it. So to a large extent, it is a support function providing services to the other environment. We also have our medical support, PolMed, IODs, and the health risk manager also indicated in this program. This program, to a large extent, is standardized through government, although not precisely the same. We differ here and there from other departments in terms of the compilation of the program, especially with regard to medical support, which we have grouped here together, and then also property management, because we were one of the first departments where the whole built environment or large parts of the built environment were devolved to the South African Police Service and not solely provided by PWD in this regard. Kevin? Now, if we look at the variances, and I would just like maybe for members to also, you know, sort of keep a lid on slide on the slide with the numbers as indicated. Kevin, can you just give me that one, because we're going to explain now actually that slide by means of this slide. We say the increased expenditures as a result of discernible emphasis on the following. The overs, a little bit of the overs. We expended more on capital infrastructure, on new facilities. We expended a little bit more on modernization of IT, for instance, the AVL and AFIS, and then also on certain training interventions resulted in this program to be a little bit overexpended. This also in respect of strengthening of the capacity of the detectives, especially capital equipment for general organized and commercial crime investigators and the forensic environment. And then we say our under expenditure resulted from Program 2 and Program 5. Variances under Program 2 and Program 5 mainly as a result of lower operational expenditures that realized. If I go back to those programs, because it's actually easier to explain it from here, there's a very important aspect. We say that we had overs on Program 1 and Program 3. We had unders on Program 2 and Program 4 and Program 5, but actually not even Program 4, because it's so minor, it's not even true. So it's 3.5% and 0.5%, and monies were then vested at detective services and administration, training, IT, and capital works. Now, as I've said, if I look at the comparative analysis regarding previous financial years, I see that in terms of normally members have or had an issue in 2007 with some of the other programs, Program 2 came down from 2.5% to last year 2.4%, before last year 2.4%, and are now 0.6%, and then also the personnel expenditure, we only had 0.1% spending variance of merely 0.6%, sorry, in terms of the 08-09 financial year. We believe that we have achieved the objectives that we wanted to achieve. If members took the two last financial years, members will again see that the members increased on Program 2 with nearly or approximately 6,000 people. So we achieved our appointments in terms of Program 2, in terms of the members that we have appointed in this regard. These are just in order to explain the variances. Obviously, it can also be done in much more detail. Now, next one. We go a bit further, and this is basically a summary of the income statement, or the new name statement of financial performance, as one would get these days, as the second statement in the financial statement, just after the appropriation statement. The department had, in essence, three revenue sources, because we say we're going to indicate the sources of revenue and the expenses. Three sources. We had voted funds, as provided by Parliament, the appropriated funds. Then we have other revenue where we collect on behalf of the National Revenue Fund. It could be certain fines, it could be certain penalties, it could be certain tariffs they pay, for instance, for incident reports and so forth. And then there's also donor assistance. And we indicate here exactly precise, according to the source, according to your revenue source, what exactly have you expended per revenue source. And you will immediately see on the voted funds, we've basically expended the whole 41 billion, which we received from Parliament, as already indicated. In terms of other revenue, we cannot keep those revenues. They must go back to the National Revenue Fund, and it competes again with other priorities in government, and then it gets reappropriated by yourselves, Parliament, again to the department. So a department cannot use it and expend it. There was approximately 376 million to be surrendered to the National Revenue Fund, and then we had donor assistance of 7 million we received. We expended 13 million with a bit of a deficit of 6.215 million. The reason being that in terms of donor funds, one can keep your previous balance. This is for one financial year, so we add an opening balance. If you add the opening balance, the net expenditure becomes a surplus and not a deficit. That is explained in the notes here too. So those are the expenditures, and we again say full utilization. This is a very, very highly abbreviated summary of the income statement. Kevin, please. So we say full utilization of funds again, 20 rand and 16 cents remained. We rounded it off to zero. The revenue collected and deposited into the National Revenue Fund was 376.456 million. Local and foreign aid assistance received for the year was 7.234 million. The opening balance from the previous year was 16.6 million. So if you add the opening balance to the money that you received during the year, you have a net surplus at the end of the financial year. We say the main reasons for the increased collection, and we actually over-collected compared to our estimates. The main reasons for the increased collection of revenue for the period under review are the following. Improved recovery of incidental debt. I think our debt processes, we have sharpened a bit and increased intensity, put in more controls and so forth, because it's always a balancing act. How aggressive should one collect the money vis-a-vis also the situation of the debtor? Then also the sale of non-capital items at auction, and then the higher number of firearm applications received. Of the 376 million to be surrendered to the revenue fund, 52.7 million, so a big portion, was as the result of firearm applications and people paying us in terms of firearm applications. That as it was part of the 376 to be surrendered to the revenue fund and paid over to the National Treasury. Then we go back, but because we said also we're going to look at a few spending items, that we in fact spent sufficient amounts or significant amounts of money on certain of the items that we said at the time prior to 2008-09 that we are going to spend monies on. And we refer, just remind members again, to what were the policy directions of the President and the Minister of Finance at the time to say, we're going to spend on this. And it was indicated on those specific periods, the Minister of Finance, we will also increase spending on fighting crime. We will improve the efficacy of police services and the justice system to make further progress in reducing crime. And the Minister of Finance, in his budget speech, we will intensify the fight against crime. And the President, the usual State of the Nation address, revamping the criminal justice system and intensify our offensive against crime, which were policy directions at that point in time to indicate the importance of the policing environment. Now, certain of the spending directions or policy priorities were additional personnel, the capital infrastructure, the ports of entry, the reserve system, the modernization of SAS networks and the capacity at the forensic science laboratories. I would just like also to remind members during our meeting earlier this year where we had to present the way forward as well as a five-year backward-looking approach. We already indicated some of the aspects that were achieved in the past 5 years and also what we are going to achieve in the next 5 years. and those were some of it at that point in time. Now, the first aspect was the improved remuneration. We introduced a special dispensation a couple of years ago, and that still continues in terms of the carry-through effect in terms of grade progression, pay progression, improvement of conditions of service, and so forth. But one very important aspect is one will see that additional personnel, the target was 183,180, the police appointed 182,754, at 9,513 more than the previous financial year, and those are the targets as achieved in the past couple of financial years. Members are just again reminded that the SAPS, I think when we started in 2003 started in the vicinity of 119,000 people, so we are already at 182,754. That was on the personnel aspect. The vehicle fleet, it has been indicated, and the vehicles that have been purchased as replacements and in additions, we have already, we've also expended the 235 million we received on the IJS project in order to get that pipeline effect in the criminal justice system. This is not the CJS review. The CJS review is only applicable from the current financial year 09-10, where we have 200 million, which will become 900 million, which will become 1.850 billion in time to come. Then we also had the reserve system, and we had discussions with the committee where the reserve system was also currently under review together with the whole borderline aspect. But nevertheless, we expended 168 million also on the borderline aspect, control aspect. The bulletproof vest, highly contentious issue for a number of years. It has been indicated also under the performance indicators. We again expended 85 million in that specific financial year, and then also the number of sets that we purchased, as well as the total number of sets. Then also buildings and other fixed structures, 991 million was actually spent in this regard. And this does not include rentals and plant maintenance and so forth. These are only new works which we expended. And then also upgrading of network infrastructure and hosting environments. We are developing all of these systems, so we have to also upgrade our network and hosting infrastructure. And we are also pushing money towards those environments. And 178 million in 08-09. Was also expended on network and hosting infrastructure. We also had ports of entry, and I think the capacity of the designated commercial ports significantly increased. We had good discussions also with Protection Security Services, and this will also be forthcoming in your Tuesday meeting with Protection Security Services, because that is actually where ports of entry is vesting. There's a 38% increase in terms of capacity building. Then training, the expenditure increased approximately by 16% to 1.124 billion all in all. The forensic science laboratory, notwithstanding the CJS review amount of 1.908 billion, we also expended over and above the baseline, 143 million. This was also explained in a question, a written question, Chairperson, which we provided to the committee regarding the 09-10 financial year, so there's a bit of overlapping, but we also expended 143 million in terms of equipment to provide at least an interim boost to those important environments in order to do that. Then also the automated vehicle location system, which we also have to expedite in terms of implementation according to SCOPA as well, because that is one of your more appropriate and better control mechanisms, especially if you have a vehicle fleet of around 42,000 vehicles, soft body vehicles. And then also firearms, we've expended another 36 million in terms of firearms to keep the ball rolling also in the firearm environment, where we add additional personnel and we have to provide new firearms. And then we've expended 19.7 once again in terms of the Firearm Control Act. Then we have included the old well-known, and you know it by heart by now, where we add the whole time where we say, what have we done over a multi-year period, the past couple of years, and we've referred there to the compensation environment, to the whole railway environment, ports of entry environment, and obviously it includes static and mobile protection. Then the aircraft, I think we've purchased, Commissioner Lamouri, must correct me if I'm wrong, 13 aircraft in the past 7 years. Choppers, for instance. We're trying to keep the capital expenditure also there rolling, the elections. May I just indicate, coming to the elections as well, and then also to what's happening with the service delivery protest, we will already, and I'm saying it today to the committee, will have to provide, to look for overtime funds to push towards a VISPOL environment, because we are deploying a lot of personnel in those areas, and they are working overtime, and it's obviously it was not foreseen. So we are going to have to shift funds again to Viraman funds a little bit in order to augment the VISPOL environment in terms of overtime. Those kind of unforeseen circumstances do happen. And then also the death grants that has been implemented, the training, the training we've emphasized, and one can probably never say enough is enough in terms of training, but we have pushed in significant amounts in there, especially also detective training. Then reservists, and the model is currently a little bit under review. The new policing infrastructure, property leases, I think there were significant growth rates, but we've said it to this committee previously, we are always striving to get more and more and more because there's some backlog on maintenance. On maintenance of certain on a lot of police stations, we need to enhance. And then also the IJS programs, modernization and expansion of the vehicle fleet. Obviously, we're coming from a base from 27,000 vehicles. We're currently at 42,000 vehicles. And then the ITC, ICT plan, the firearm control system, and so forth. I'm not going to go line by line. Members know this by heart. They've studied this. They've lived with us. They have their own viewpoints in terms of this, but we've pushed monies into these items. I thank you, Madam Chairperson.
Thank you. That concludes our presentation.
Thank you very much, Commissioner Stander, Acting National Commissioner. We are going to take questions. I just want to remind members that the programs that we're dealing with are visible policing and administration. The issues related to finances, they cut across all these. So I will request that members don't get tempted and find themselves asking operational issues or policy issues on these other programs that we have not presented today, but finances, yes, we will take questions. I just want to remind members. Let me now take hands. Honorable Mulek George, in fact, let me start. Honorable Kolabana, you are the first to raise your hand. Honorable Mulek George, Honorable Annelisa, Honorable Skeifa, Honorable Reverend Mishwe, Chaifa, sorry, Chaifa. Honorable Reverend and Honorable Bichetu in the order.
Thank you, Chair. I have a number of questions. I think if I'll just run through them and then the relevant people, if you could assign to answer them. Initially, we're looking at the employment equity situation. Now, I certainly am contacted by a great many ex-SAPS members, some of whom left as little as a month previously. Experienced SAPS members who wish to return to the SAPS and are being rejected because they apparently no longer fit the employment equity demands. One man, as I say, resigned a month later was told he was the wrong color and could not be re-employed. Now, obviously, to turn away expertise in the light of the extraordinary levels of crime in this country is ridiculous. Now, who would I forward these requests to? Could I have a name, an email, or something? Because we've got to deal with these people. The disciplinary cases, what was the total of the outstanding cases from 2007-08 that have yet to be finalized? Now, I'm asking this because of the enormous amounts that we pay out annually to suspended members. The last figure I saw was about 90 million for a single year. So what is the amount that we're looking at? Are we again going to log up 100-odd million on salaries of people who are sitting at home? Page 7, well, it is amazing, or perhaps not, that legal services is not here. I couldn't agree with the chair more, and Honourable Van Wyk. Well, what these figures show on page 7 is the fact that the number of cases finalized has dropped from 55.3% to 1.77%. If a civilian shot an error by the SAPS attempts to sue the SAPS, they have virtually no chance that they will ever get to court on the matter. In fact, they'll die before they get to court. Or the family of the person who's been killed by the SAPS in error, they will all die. Maybe the great-grandchildren will be able to get paid out for an error by the SAPS. I mean, it is extraordinary. 1.77%. It quite takes my breath away. Now, how many cases are we talking about here? I noticed that was carefully left off of that figure.
Can I just interrupt you, Ms. Kola Barnett? Can we not ask these questions? Because I feel strongly that Ms. Mthimkhulu must respond to this question. She surely must account for her unit.
I absolutely agree, Chair. Unfortunately, we were assured by the acting National Commissioner that they had been somehow tasked with answering for her. So if we have your permission to hold back these questions and ask her to come and answer for herself, I would be delighted.
Please, let's not ask this question.
Let's leave it right there. Thank you. Disciplinary cases, what was the total of... we've done that. Okay, firearms. I don't know that it's detailed in the report because it's not separated, but how many firearms were lost by SAPS members over this financial year and how many of them recovered? The amount of firearms lost and misplaced by SAPS members has been growing annually. We're talking thousands and thousands and thousands of lost and simply misplaced firearms on the part of SAPS members. Which means that as the firearms and more were recovered, the lost ones related to in the annual report, they may well simply be civilian firearms that have been stolen from homes or out of a vehicle or something. Does this relate also to the SAPS firearms stolen? If you could answer that, please. And you do tell us how many bulletproof vests there are, but again, no detail of how many SAPS members do not have their own vests. Now, I sat through the SCOPA briefing where that question was dodged because I'm really not interested in the fact that we all know that new recruits receive bulletproof vests as they arrive and they're handed in a pack. But we had thousands and thousands and tens of thousands of members who were recruited prior to this instruction being issued. So how many SAPS members do not have bulletproof vests today? That is a very simple question. I'm sure somebody here has the answer to it. Moving further down, micro-dotting. I'm very interested, and I think it's an excellent idea that either we or the relevant ministry push through for micro-dotting to become compulsory. But I'm also interested, and I know how quick and on top of things the criminals are. Is there an example internationally where they have already beaten the system? Do they sandblast the cars? That can be done in 2 hours and whoop, the micro-dotting is gone. Is that a possibility? Please, just let's try and stay another step ahead of the bad guys. Now, the timelines, you did refer to the timelines in relation to sector policing, and you did assure us that finally it will be complete within the next 3 years, but we've been, I fear, told us for some years. So maybe we could hear what your timeline is, if you wouldn't mind. And I'm also interested if we have a theory, and I'm hoping you will have, in this large increase in sexual crimes. It seems an extraordinary increase, and I'm sure someone here has a theory. And we need some sort of analysis of why this is an increase and what we can do about it. Escapes from police custody. I want to know if those responsible for allowing these people out or simply somehow losing people who other members have put their lives at risk arresting, have they been expelled from the SAPs and arrested, the members who've allowed these criminals out of our police stations? Talking of farm attacks, now, with the closure of the commandos, and I want somebody to tell me now that the last commandos have been closed or not. What is the situation? But we were assured that SAPS would be creating similar units to deal with these farm attacks, but the farm attacks are up. Well, it says here 794 attacks and 86 deaths. Does the 86 deaths fall into the 794, or is that in addition to? You brushed past border security quite quickly there. The Auditor General report, I'm sure you're aware of, the total failure of our border security and the corruption going on there. Now, what is the situation? What is the status with the dealings with the Defence Force and the possibility of them taking it back? Or how far are we down that line? Hostage situations, we're up to 230. What is your success rate of live hostage recovery? Is this a big problem in this country, or is it usually domestic? I'm not sure. And then looking finally at the finance performance, 52.7 million was taken from firearm applicants in exchange. How many people have received their licenses?
Can we have a honorable Cora Baron receiving other questions for the next round?
Okay.
That's such a request, Ms. Cora Baron. I heard you saying finally.
Well, I have a few others, but if you'd prefer me to stop now, I'm quite happy to do so.
Sure. May I pray for indulgence? Would it be mine, because some of us, we didn't raise our hands in the first round. We wanted to raise our hands in the second round after hearing the responses from the first round. It seems as if some of us will leave this meeting without asking any questions. Is there any possibility of limiting the members in the rounds of how many questions the member should? I'm not saying block them not to ask questions, but to limiting them so that most of the members ask questions. Because it seems as if we're going to sit here and listen to other people speaking and the others will just be a spectator. This is not a football ground.
We will allow members not to ask more than four questions. It may be one, two, but not more than four at a given time.
Well, this one, Madam Chair, is not a question. I think we must say that we appreciate the police administration saying that they have full utilization of voter funds. But I think I'd be very happy if the acting commissioner, because the national commission, if you can just tell us, in your opinion, do you think that we got value for our money? It's easy to say you finished you fully utilized the budget. Do we have value for our money? Because sometimes I know when departments towards they just spend money just to make sure that the money is finished. That is what I would like. We talk about 3,125 cases. I just wanted to know from you, surely as police you have benchmarked yourselves against other countries. What is the standard? Are we out, or are we? Because I don't want us to say to get alarmed and say 2,000, only to find that. That's why I say in other countries. What is the standard? How many police? Of course, the question of the suspended ones has already been touched, so I'm not going to talk about it. Corruption, 252. Again, I would like to know what is the standard. I'm talking other countries now. which you could benchmark. I'm not talking the first world, I'm talking countries that are, what is the standard? Because you know 252 police charge for corruption. You know, they are supposed to make sure that they prevent corruption. They now it's 252 are charged for corruption. I have always been worried about this budget for fears for escape. So why do you budget for? I see you budgeted 700 escapes. You've got 719 escapes. Why do you budget? What is the problem? Why do you budget for escapes in the first place? Now there's 719 escapes. What could be the reason? Because I think this is what could be the reason why? Because 719 is say 1,000 something percent. What could be the reason? Is there a problem with our police stations holding cells, or what is it that makes such a huge number of escapes? Because I don't want to assume that they have been released by police. The last thing, Madam Chair, you talk about this environment, but it's strange you're taking from visible police to understand. In fact, you've been understanding when you were reading. You've been understanding from visible police. Of course, you're down now to 0.58. But you're from. I would assume that visible policing is supposed to be one of your core. I mean, visible policing is at the center of policing. Why are you not spending money? You're fully spending the money on visible policing, or are you over budgeting for visible policing? Because you've been over budgeting, you have been underspending in visible policing. What is the reason? Because that, to me, is supposed to be one of your key operations for success of the police. Visible policing is number one. Why are you not spending the money for it?
Thank you, Chairperson. First question relates to training. It is reported that 18,072 members failed operational training. It's 13%, just over 13% of the number that attended that training. I would like to know what the reason is for them failing. And since it's operational training, what happened to those members that failed that training? Are they in the field? Are they operationally utilized? And if they're not, how are these gaps filled? How are we filling the 13,000 who are not operational, haven't successfully completed their operational training? And what's the cost of these 13,000 that failed? The reason why I'm asking this question is police officers get killed. The chairperson referred to the three that was killed in the past week. Operational training forms a very important part of street survival, et cetera, et cetera. Now, if they are still in the field, are we contributing to the fact that our members are exposed to being killed because they're not properly trained, or they don't succeed in their training, but yet we still utilize them as operational officers? Also, on the issue of disciplinary cases, for me, is becoming a huge problem. I mean, they haven't achieved their target, SAPs, not by even close. That they achieve the target in finalization of these cases. The reasons that are provided to us in the annual report are not new reasons. We hear those same reasons every year. Year after year we hear it's either the employee or the employer that asks for extension, or the employer who's been charged go on sick leave, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. When are we addressing those reasons? And coupled to that, Chairperson, why are we bringing members who are committed fraud and corruption to disciplinary hearings and not criminal charges? I mean, I fail to understand. There's an attitude Also in private sector and in you get it at universities everywhere, where people tend to, when corruption happens within, fraud and corruption happens within, you know, please rather resign or just disappear, or let's do a disciplinary hearing. We're not going to root out fraud and corruption in the society unless we charge those people. And the irony is, the legislation actually says that people who commit fraud and corruption should be criminally charged. But yet, private sector who complains about fraud and corruption, the police who must implement these legislation, our training institutions, tend to turn a blind eye when it happens within their own environment. And I would like to know why SAPS are not taking a stronger stand on fraud and corruption within their own ranks, and why do they discipline these people rather than charge them criminally. Mr. George, I can count. Thank you very much. The issue around career development. Chairperson, this is also an issue that we raise year after year after year after year. SAPS is not... definitely not convincing me that they've got a career development or a career management within the police service. The report that we've got here in front of us refers to page 45, career development. If you look at those two single paragraphs in the whole of this annual report, it basically talks about recruitment. It's not talking about career development. It talks about mobile units who went out to recruit. It talks about exhibitions at career days, etc. Where is the career management in SAPS? We're not going to have a professional police service before we actually allow a police officer who entered training college to say to someone out there who's going to take notice of them, say, I want to become a detective in the end. And somebody actually sitting down and planning that person's career path to becoming a detective. We're not doing it. And then we ask ourselves, why do we not get value for money? Why do we spend all these billions of rands, but we don't see the decrease that we are supposed to be seeing? I can tell you, because you want bodies out there. You don't want professional police officers.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm getting worried I'm agreeing with the ANC today. My first question relates also to training. It's all very well saying we have this training, but what is the quality of the training? I likewise have a concern about our police officers getting shot, and it's very clear from statements that have been made in the papers lately that police do not understand the law as it is at the moment. And it's quite clear the law provides for them to shoot in their own defense when they need to, and we keep on hearing, no, but we can't defend ourselves and we need this change. Why? Why are they saying this? Because they haven't been trained for it. So I've heard that the entry-level training doesn't even provide for training in law as it used to. Is that true or isn't it true? And if it is true, then why? We had a police assistant police commissioner in the Western Cape saying that we haven't got any legislation to deal with human trafficking. I mean, there's plenty of legislation to deal with human trafficking. There's Organised Crime Act, there's Sexual Offences Act. She said, no, we've only got the Sexual Offences Act. I mean, that's quite enough, actually. It's got a whole section on sexual trafficking. Now, why are people having this display of, you know, lack of knowledge? And the other thing about training is, why have 32% of your training centres not even been accredited with a CETA? What is the situation? Why has it even got to that point? And the Western Cape has only been accredited in the last 2 months. they can't even get their own firearm licenses. I mean, how can the police not get your own firearm license? Secondly, the question of reservists. We're not going to get an answer as to what the time frame for the so-called review of reservists is going to be. Why are we keep asking community to help fight crime, and when they try and fight crime, we say, no, we can't do it because we've got a moratorium on the reservist issue. And I have asked this before anyway, why do we even have to put a moratorium on while you're doing the review? You can still appoint people. I still do not understand the reason for this. I haven't received any logical explanation for that at all. You're talking about all these millions of rands that you're spending on infrastructure, on network infrastructure. I know we have spoken about this before, about the interrelationship between the departments. Are you liaising with the Justice and Correctional Services Department to make sure that they were compatible this time around, and Home Affairs? And fourthly, Also, just relating to my colleague's question on your employment equity, it's all very nice saying you've complied with your employment equity ratios, but on the other hand, your vacancy rate has increased. Now, is it really worth keeping your employment equity ratio when you have got an increasing vacancy rate and you've got people wanting to come back who've got experience? Please tell me what the answer is to that.
Thank you, Chairperson. My first question also on operational training. I want to know if the training includes target shooting to be used particularly when a person drives away from maybe a roadblock, as it happened in the case of the Kekana family. What are the rules? When a person does not stop, when the police stop them, is there an order to shoot at the person, or do you aim at the tires to stop the car? Because from the pictures we have seen, the bullets in the Kekana situation were on the body of the car, meaning that the passenger or the driver was aimed at and not the tires. So I want to know, what is the policy, and is target shooting tray given to all the SAP members, particularly those who are doing operational work? The second one, linked to the first one, what is the police responsibility when after the shooting they realize that a person is either injured or dead? Now, when you hear reports that the police drove away and left people to bleed and die, it's worrying. So what are the rules? Obviously, a case like that, we will be told, is being investigated. Now, when there is prima facie evidence that the police did drive away, why does it take months before you come to the conclusion of such an investigation? Because what happened this past week obviously has got many people angry in the country. So I want to know, when there is evidence that somebody is injured and the police just drive away and leave the people at the scene, is that part of the rules? Is it acceptable? And if not, are the disciplinary measures imposed on such policemen? And thirdly, there also has been some debate in some parts of the media about the effectiveness of the bulletproof vest. There is a company on the East Rand that claims that they have tested the quality of their bulletproof vest, that they are able to stop AK-7 bullets, while the police bulletproof vests are not able. Now, I want to know whether that has been verified, because from what I've heard, that bulletproof vests used by the police do not stop AK-47. So that's what we are hearing now. Are the police verifying the claims of this manufacturer, or what's happening? The last one. There was a case this past week. I visited a police station on the East Rand, and there was a queue of people who needed help. And when I spoke to the station commissioner, she said, we have vehicles to help these people, but we don't have drivers because all the drivers are sick. Now, what would happen when the police say there are vehicles, but there are no drivers? And one person said, I have an emergency. Can the police please jump into my car to come and resolve this problem? And the commissioner said, we are not allowed to get into civilian cars. So what should happen? What are the rules when there are emergencies and the drivers are sick? Thank you.
I allowed the referent to ask the fifth question because he said final, and he's the referent. Honorable Elketo.
Thank you, Chair. Let me take this opportunity to thank the presentation. From your documents, I see that you are suspending left, right, and center. To me, a suspension is a suspension. Others, you suspend with salary, others without salary. to me, very sad. Can you probably look into uplifting this suspension of our salary? The second issue, it's on reservist, and the DA, a member, has talked on my behalf. I'm not going to repeat that. My second question is around personnel. That is, you are claiming in your documents that you've got about not less than 400 vacancies, particularly at the junior level. I just wanted to find out, when are you filling up these posts? Thank you, Chair.
These are the questions. I think there's still more that is coming. I just want to find out, according to SCOPA, the money that you're spending on AVL is regarded as a wasteful expenditure. That's what SCOPA report says. Why are you continuing to spend it on that? I just also want to know on house robbery. In your own view, why do you think there's an increase? And what is the arrest rate? And what is the conviction rate as far as that is concerned? Let me stop there. Before, the last one, yes. The last one is on page 47 of the annual report. According to this document that is before us, you have trained at entry level 19,801. But according to the annual report, it says a total of 11,034 persons completed such entry-level training. Which is which here? Because it's these figures are just not the same. Can we get clarity on that? I'll come back.
Thank you, Chairperson. I am going to request the relevant divisional commissioners to respond and the component heads to respond to their field of responsibility. And if there is questions remaining, I'll come back to them. We start with Commissioner Lamour, please.
Thanks, Chair. The issue on sector policing, the instruction to all provincial commissioners is that by the 30th of October, they must supply us with the implementation plan on how they will address the 45 police stations that was identified in the SCOPA report or the IG's report of the previous financial year. We visited all those police stations and there is massive improvement, but they must just finalize it by the 30th of October. In the rest of the 169 police stations, high contact crime stations, the 30th of November 2009, they must give us a report on the final implementation of sector policing, as I reported that currently we're standing at 134 police stations. The province that have the highest number of not implementing is KwaZulu-Natal, and we will assist them in doing that. Priority police stations identified by the provincial commissioners, the timeline is 30 June 2010. And then all the remaining police stations, the 31st of December 2012. That is a 3-year period.
come in there. Do you now have a sector policing policy?
It is approved, Chairperson, on the 13th of July 2009. And everybody have copies of that. This is also the implementation guideline. It's also part and parcel of this document.
Why the others are left? Can we get a clarity if they say the other one is 31st of October, the other one is 31st of November? why is it a different time frame? And why the other provinces are not the same as the others? Why the others are treated better than the others?
Chairperson, it is not a case that one is treated different from the others. The 169 police stations is a high crime contact station that includes all nine provinces. Each province has a high crime station, and that date is the 30th of November 2009. The priority stations, as identified by all provincial commissioners, is the 30th of June 2010. And all other police stations in the country will then be the 31st of December 2012. So there is no differentiation between any of the provinces or any of the police stations. Chairperson, the issue on hostage takers or victims, I just want to make sure, is it the hostage takers or is it the victims that you referred to? I will get that information too, because I didn't have that specific information, how many victims were injured or killed. Most of our cases is the successful release of hostages, but I will give the specific details to you, to the chair, as soon as possible. Borderline security. There is ongoing discussion between ourselves and the Defence, South African National Defence Force. The next meeting will be on in November the 9th to the 9th and 10th of November, a further planning session so that we can then put the report before our DG, and from there it will be discussed between the relevant role players. The issue of farm attacks, the number that I referred to, the 794, That is incidents that happened there. And out of that, 86 murders took place. The escape from custody, the figures of members charged with this, we can supply that to the committee. We do take action against members that are negligent when it comes to escape from custody. But one of our major issues is that some of ourselves are not conducive to detain suspects. So it means from there we take it over to another police station and then it becomes overcrowding. That is the one part. The other part is also that we have courts that refer awaiting trial prisoners to the police stations, and where they sometimes sit for longer periods than the 48 hours that we normally sit with our suspect that we need to charge and investigate in crime. We still do have courts that refer awaiting trial prisoners to our police stations. So I think that is from my side. Madam Chair, we never put a target of 700. There's no target. Our target is actually a zero target. We want to have no escapes. And any escape, it's too many, because it means the work of police officers investigating and arresting becomes null and void. So we said, no, it is too high. And that's why we try to do anything in our power to ensure there's no escapes.
We will appreciate it if now you no longer have a target of escapes, because during the budget speech, you had a target, and we raised that to say, how do you aim to have escapes anyway? So there were, and if now you no longer have, we appreciate that. It's a sudden change. But let me just make a follow-up just on the question of the policy. So you, on the 1st of July, the department appeared before SCOPE this year. And in that meeting, the department agreed that it does not have an approved draft policy. You are saying to us it was then approved at the end of July on that very same month. Can you explain to us the process that led to that approval, taking into cognizance the fact that you had had this draft policy for about 7 years and it was being implemented? And what were the issues that you take into cognizance when we are approving the policy now? We have things that we got from police stations that talk about this. Is there a difference now?
Connected to yours. Yes, I'm also worried about the fact that, as you say, it's been there for 7 years. There's also a decrease in the number of police stations that have actually implemented the sector policing. Mm-hmm. And that needs explanation. You guys are just rushing over it and not giving us an explanation on why there's suddenly a decrease. And those that are actually there, are they at phase four or not? And the other thing, Chairperson, with all due respect, 7 years on, we're only going to finish the process with the high priority crime areas in 2012, if I heard you correctly. 20? Okay, 2010. 8 years later, is this policy still relevant? Do you still believe this is the policy that should be adopted? And if it is, why the slow rollout? Because after the 169, the reason why it was prioritized is because it was the majority crime. Surely your ideal is that thereafter it should go to other stations as well. Now, 10 years later, 8 years later, and we haven't even done the priority crime areas.
Thanks. The policy was a draft policy, as you stated, since 2002. But apart from that policy, there was also a divisional instruction given from my office 2 years ago to start with the implementation. And all the elements in the draft or the divisional instruction is contained in the policy itself. So, and on the 26th of June this year, there was a consultation process between all provincial commissioners, not junior members, provincial commissioners who were engaged in the finalization of this document. And that is in the final document that we presented to the National Commissioner for approval. That is the first part. The second part is when it comes to the 169 police stations, while there is a fluctuation, it's because of some police stations talk about resources that were not there. And I think now what we are saying to police stations is that you don't need to have four sectors, because one station can't have four sectors sometimes. Where a bigger station has four, the one will only have two stations. There is one station in the Northern Cape that clearly stated to us they will only have one sector because the station is so small, but they will then implement the sector policing. The issue of the timelines. The timelines, we report to SCOPA that by the 30th that we, within 3 years, we will roll out the total process. But rollout doesn't mean the implementation. It means continuous monitoring of the implementation of sector policing. Because most of these stations already have a form of sector policing in the country. We receive feedback from all police stations in the country, and it looked like that less than 100 police stations didn't start with the implementation of sector policing. Just yesterday, I had a meeting with provincial heads from the different provinces and said, we will now, as from now on, come to the provinces and look at the implementation of sector policing. The 45 police stations identified in the AG's report, we visit all 45 police stations, and the implementation there is on a level 4 currently. So we have very good feedback from that side, that there is very good understanding from most provinces. As I indicated, only KwaZulu-Natal that didn't implement it, and we are busy dealing with them right now. Because, I mean, from the priority stations, there was almost no implementation. Chairperson, there's just one issue about micro-dotting. We didn't do any research. I know the Australian government have legislation, and we will do the research and we'll report back to the committee.
Chairperson, then I will request Commissioner Cruzas to respond to the training issues.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think the first question was related to the members declared not competent in the operational environment, which was about 18,000 out of the broad target, which was within the the target of 80%. The first thing is that when members are declared not competent, previously everyone got a certificate to go back to the station. What happens now, we have a verification and moderation process. Members then get sent back to their province, where they have to go through remedial exercises and then redo the course after doing the remedial exercises itself. So the provincial training manager gets a report on the people who are not competent, and they will then have to ensure that those people then address the shortcomings in terms of those remedial exercises, so they can be addressed in a future training course itself. It's very difficult for me to, at this stage, I can come back to the committee of how that will fail. There are over 250 operational courses. I don't have the figures of those 18,000 individuals for what reason they failed, but I can give you the reasons of all the 18,000 it was requested by the committee. And also the cost I don't have here.
With all due respect, I mean, I mustn't make members look like idiots. I'm not asking for 18,000 reasons. That's not what I'm asking for. In general, why do members fail operational training? Is it a question of them not being fit enough? Is it a question of them not, shouldn't have been there from the beginning, etc.?
Well, I think there are various operations. As I said, there's over 250 operational courses. I mean, sometimes in the issue of fitness, there is the issue of fitness, and they send back for remedial, and we're busy with the new fitness directives from the National Commission, which everyone must comply with. On the issue of either on shooting exercises, the issue of, for a long time, people have not shot regularly, and now they have to shoot regularly, therefore we have to go on additional training for those people who are behind with their firearm training on those issues itself. On the issue of detective training, some people don't make it, and we therefore recommend that they should be shifted to other environments itself. So there are various reasons over the 250 programs we present in operational areas itself. And the cost I don't have, unfortunately, what are the cost of those things? I can get the cost to you. The second issue is the issue of the quality of training. And do they undertake law? I think our present basic training, entry-level training program, yes, it does have a module. I think we presented it to the committee, the whole program itself. I think it's quite intensive. It's one of the most difficult modules which a lot of members don't get competent. We just terminated 30 people last week for not passing that model, and therefore they will not become police officers. We do a lot of remedials on the issue of law in that training program, precisely because of the gap between school and the institution. But yes, we do the law models both there, and in all detective training, we redo the law models itself. The issue of 32% of our training institutions not accredited, I think the process of accreditation, it's quite a complex. I think by far we have the most accredited institutions in the country. We have 25 national institutions. And then we also have provincial institutions. All our basic training institutions have been fully accredited, and they all of them have received the ISOE award, Order of Excellence, of Occupational Excellence, all the 10 basic, which was our first target to achieve when we started this process of accreditation 4 years ago. We've now ensured all our management and leadership institutions are accredited, and we're in the process of ensuring that all our in-service training institutions are accredited. The process we have followed in terms of law, government institutions like most schools and universities are deemed accredited. We chose to go the route of earning accreditation, and we're in the process, by the end of the financial year, all our in-service institutions will also have achieved full accreditation. Mm-hmm. Provinces have also started the process of accreditation now, and most of the institutions in all the provincial institutions, where shooting is concerned, all the provinces have that competency to issue the firearm license. All of them do have the competency to issue that. Sorry? Well, they do the course, they have the right to certify people for accreditation. Because where we don't have a certified shooting ranges, we use private certified shooting ranges to achieve that objective itself. And then there was another question on training. The issue of the target shooting. We do various levels of shooting in terms of training, and we do it in compliance with the present laws as they stand. And no, we do not train people to shoot cars if they're going. The only time people may use their firearms is when their lives or lives of any citizen is in danger. They may use the firearms. And all members are trained in terms of that. Chair, I think it was the issue of the numbers and the issue of the 19,000 and the, I think it's 11,000. There are two issues here. The numbers that passed in the report is the total number of individuals that qualified for that financial aid in basic training. In basic training, there are various different training programs to achieve. So our training system would record it when they do the first 6 months of the first semester. They then get certified and must be declared competent, and that is in, on the system. So say if it's 10,000 people, 10,000 will be then declared competent at that level. They then go to the second semester, which is field training. They then have to be declared competent in that program of field training. The other thing is some members go, the numbers of some members go over a period of 2 years itself. They will do their first session in one financial year. They'll do the second semester in another financial year, and therefore therefore those numbers would not be the same itself. I don't know if it's clear to you, Chair.
It's not clear. What will not be the same? I mean, this is a summary of your annual report.
Yeah.
Why would these figures not be the same?
Chair, the one is the numbers of people, the number of people who pass training programs. And the other one is the number of persons who completed the complete entry level into the police service itself. And that's where there's this difference, because the training system records every training program separately, even if it's in basic training. When they go to the institution, the first phase training institution, they would then complete the first phase of training and be put onto the system, say 10,000 have completed basic training semester one. That would be the first part of the qualification, which the CETA would come in, moderate and verify that, and then certify those people competent in the first phase before they can go to the second phase. The same people will then go to field training. They will then have to be declared competent again by us and the CETA itself through a moderation verification process itself. So the system would record them again as completed the second phase. Only then they get the certificate. When the combination of those two causes will give you a total number of people who have then completed basic training in that financial year. But some people will do also training over two years. Like people who start in January month and start their or December start their basic training. They go into the new financial year to do their field training. So the numbers will do differ in that sense. I don't know.
I don't understand. I don't think I'm likely to understand. Really, my question is that this is a summary of this. That will be my understanding of it. Whether there are changes as you explain them, but I expect that this summarizes this. That's my real understanding, my logic understanding. Now, I wouldn't understand as to why at the end of the financial year you'd come up with a figure here, and then when you write a summary from this book, it differs. Because I don't think you went to your computer or whatever. I take it that you took your figures from this book. I don't know. That's my understanding. Why does it change when you write the summary? Because for me, you're writing a summary from your annual report. That's my question. Whether it will change at some stage and so on, I will understand that, but that should appear on your annual report. Now, it can't change when you write the summary that you're going to present to Parliament. That's my question. And change so dramatically, 19,000 and 11,000.
Chairperson, when we were doing the summary, we have to draw the stats from our training administration system. All our figures we give to Parliament, we give them so they don't vary. On a certain date, we would draw the stats from the training administration system itself. The issue of the 11,000 persons completed the training, there were 10,000 completed the basic training program itself. That is the numbers which were recruited for that financial year to be completed itself. But the breakdown of in terms of the people who passed entry-level courses would differ in terms of the numbers and the number of the entry-level courses itself. The program and the courses are different, which is a combination of two sets of training programs, which they are certified by the CETA. Therefore, the training and administration system captures them whenever they complete a certain phase in terms of the training.
Guide us, if we are writing a report, should we use these figures or use these figures?
Chair, in terms of the total bodies, the annual report would be the correct one for the total bodies.
Madam Chair, may I follow up my question on the training? Thank you. Can you just confirm with me, to get a firearm license, you need training in street survival and you need training in firearm competence, is that correct? Where is that done?
It's done at the provincial level.
At SAPS training centers?
SAPS intense, yeah.
So what is the reason why then? How are you training people, in, for example, in Mpumalanga, where they have naught accredited stations, training centers? And we have Gauteng where you have 5 out of 19 accredited. Where are they getting accredited? And why are there policemen walking around getting permits every 14 days to carry the firearm and others getting permits every single day they have to go and report on duty? Why?
Well, I think the first thing, to get accreditation for shooting, there is a training program which people are credited for, which the police is credited for. That is the computerized training program which they do on the computer, which is done by all institutions if anyone wants to go for a license. That's the first phase which all people have to do. The second phase is the street survival training phase, which is the phase the police have brought in, which is higher than the normal phase for the requirement of a license. So legally, you only have to do the first computer phase to be in possession of a firearm in terms of the act. We have raised the bar in terms of wanting our policemen to be at the highest standards, and therefore we then do it in terms of the street survival program itself.
Thank you, but my question is, how are you going to do it if you haven't got accredited training?
Well, we use accredited, outsourced accredited training shooting ranges, where we don't have our own shooting ranges.
Then why hasn't it been done?
I just want to come in there, because I think now there's conversation, and I've got to interrupt. Let's have other responses. Take the second round.
Sorry to interrupt. Before we move on, I've got four questions unanswered from the first round.
That's what I'm saying.
We're suddenly moving on to the second round. I nearly had a heart attack.
No. They are responding. Then we'll move on to the second round.
Madam Chair, to answer the Honourable Reverend Moshu on the reliability of our bulletproof vests. Our specification from our bulletproof vests emanates from the American National Institute of Justice. All our bulletproof vests are being tested by our forensic laboratory. The steel plate that Mr. Rossian from the Israelis is referring to is outdated. From a number of seminars that we have attended, it's no longer being used, the steel plate, rather the ceramic tile. The ceramic tile does not go alone. Our bulletproof vest consists of 21 layers of Kevlar, which we call the outer, not the ceramic tile. The Kevlar, because most of our police members are being killed by 9mm pistols, the Kevlar with the 21 layers at five meters, the 9mm bullet vest, 9mm gun doesn't penetrate the fifth layer of the 21 layers of the Kevlar. The steel plate that Mr. Rosian is referring to is outdated, and it was proved to be dangerous because when a bullet hits the steel plate, it ricochets and goes to the head and kills the members. This article appeared in the newspaper on the 21st of September 2009 about the inferiority of our bulletproof vest. We have four manufacturers in the country that are supplying the bulletproof vest. Madam Chair, I asked them for their response on this article. Briefly, I will summarize what each of them is saying about the article, if you allow me. Madam Chair. Mr. Trevor is from All Action Wear, one of our suppliers. He's saying, I'm quoting him, the subs vests get tested and verified from its ballistic capability to its material qualities, which is all in accordance with the numerous SABS testing procedures by a third-party quality control company, which is AMSCO. Only then, once all the inspections are done and a 100% pass rate is achieved, then delivery will take place, thus making the police vest of the subs the highest standard in the world. Sadiq, also a supplier, second supplier of a bulletproof vest, says all orders are inspected before dispatch by an AMSCO inspector, SABS, and AMSCO compliance certificate are issued on each consignment for conformance. Fieldware, also one of the suppliers, is almost saying the same thing. And the last one, bulletproof technology, is also claiming that this is one of the best bulletproof vests in the world for the South African police. Madam Chair, it's always a problem when some of the companies can't afford to get the tender, they will regard the other suppliers' qualities as inferior. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Chairperson, can I ask a follow-up question? Now, the issue of AK-47s and R4 rifles have been used, and the claim is the bullets of AK-47s do not penetrate what this gentleman is talking about. So my question was, did you verify the claim? And the, what about the bulletproof vests that are used by the vests? Can they stop an AK-47 bullet? That's the question.
Yes, Madam Chair, yes. The ceramic tile can stop an AK-47 rifle, R4 rifle, and R5 rifle with that ceramic tile. I've got a sample of a bulletproof vest that was, this is an AK-47. The member was wearing this bulletproof vest, AK-47. I can circulate to the honorable members to see.
A quick follow, yeah, well, just a quick follow. Have all the metal plates now been, because I've seen a lot of the metal, have they all been removed and all ceramic tiles been replaced?
All removed. We're only using ceramic tiles, which are lighter than the previous one.
Thank you. I'm going to ask Commissioner Paslani to respond to the issues relevant to personnel services and the discipline issues.
Thanks, Chair. There was a question linked to employment equity, but I think it's speaking more about the re-enlistment of former members. And the question as to who to submit to. Now, let me first clarify that part. We don't accept any application from any party or any group of people. We accept applications from individuals. So such individuals are to put their applications in writing and direct such an application to either the provincial commissioner's office or to the national commissioner's office. They can direct it to the divisional commissioner of personnel services. In the application, they need to tell when were they employed in the service, when did they leave the service, why did they leave the service, what is it that they are skilled in or equipped with, and what is it that the organization is going to benefit by considering them for reemployment. It doesn't mean that by virtue of applying you will be accepted. I will come to some of the things that we look at, and on that note, I need to say that re-enlistment like employment in the service, will not only be considered focusing on the color of the skin of an individual. The first requirement is that that person must be a South African. Secondly, or she must have met the minimum requirements. Now, I have responded previously to this, but I will do that again, Chair. If I only take 2009 up to the end of 2009, as an organization we have approved, that's now from the 1st of April until end of September, we have approved 37 applications of former members. 16 of them, which represent 44% of what is approved, are white males, 16. Six of them, which is 16%, is white females. 16% is African males. Three of them, 8%, is African females. Colored males, 3, that represents 8%. Colored females, 3, 8%. Indian male, 0, and Indian female, 0. So I'm reading this to prove the point that there is no basis in the argument that we reject people solely because of the color of their skin. First, Madam Chair, we look at the skills of that particular individual. Secondly, we look at what was that individual doing since he or she left the service. If this person left the service 10 years ago and went into construction or building industry, that training that he or she has is irrelevant to today's policing demands. It is then going to be expected of us to retrain that person. Now, you are retraining someone whose age is more advanced. It's much cheaper for us to employ someone at entry level and train that person for the benefit of the country long term. I don't want to waste time. I could go through the figures of 2008 and 2007, but what is before us suggests that we take into consideration applications from all South Africans. They also have to go through a vetting process to check if whether they don't pose a security risk with the links or their involvement since they have left the country. And I think we are very jealous of the security of our country. Secondly, Chair, on the disciplinary cases, let me just mention, yes, we have underachieved in the 2008-2009 financial year because our target was finalized 70% of reported disciplinary cases within 60 calendar days, and our actual performance there is 42%. I think the reasons given why, and as correctly said, are reasons that have consistently been provided of members don't pitch up for hearing, the postponement because of the employer or employee representative, unavailability of witnesses, and absence of permanent structures. One of the things that need to be noted is that we were in the previous two financial years, 2006-2007, the focus was only on the finalization, not taking into consideration the time frames. Because the policy is saying you need to ensure that the disciplinary cases are finalized within 60 days. So we were then focusing on the finalization, which was in many instances beyond the set 60 days, and there our performance was recorded at 73.9%. 2007-2008, same. The performance was also in the region of 70 over that period. Just to answer a question on what are we doing, when you look, we carried over from 2007 to 2008, 519 cases. We have received 3125. We have finalized 3187. With the focus on the finalization within the 60 calendar days, 87% of those cases were finalized in that financial year. Outstanding is 457. Where we are now, as at the end of September, having initiated some measures, we have finalized 73% of the disciplinary cases within the 60 calendar days. What we have done, Chair, we have, as we have reported previously, we have established disciplinary units. Because part of the problem was that every officer was expected to be a presiding officer or a prosecutor in a case. And many of them, that was an additional responsibility over and above their normal day-to-day duties. Towards the end of 2008, we embarked on this process to establish disciplinary units so that we can have a dedicated capacity to process. What we also did, Chair, is to initiate the review of the discipline regulations because somewhere there were some elements within the regulations that are making it impossible for us to finalize the disciplinary cases within a shorter time frame. That review will be completed by the end of this month, and we will then embark on a consultation process with labor, which may be short or may be long, depending on the reception there. There was a question related to the corruption-related cases. Why are we not charging these members criminally? They are being charged criminally. What we are following up on from an HR perspective is the breach of the code of conduct. The criminal cases are being registered in instances where there is corruption that is being reported. And I think that is being taken on board in terms of the normal crime reporting within the system.
Can I just make a follow-up? Is it recorded here? Yes. In your annual report, that of these, so many were criminally charged and so many were convicted and so on.
Okay. Chair, may I just allow Commissioner Mulcroft to respond to that?
Yes, Chairperson. In Program 3, Detective Services, on Tuesday, this will be presented.
On my original question, yeah, with all due respect, I have seen the letters sent back to these members. They state specifically, if I can think of one particular one, he had resigned 1 month previously. His family situation changed. A member was diagnosed with a dreaded disease, so he wanted to come back to his initial job. Highly experienced. He was told, you do not fit the employment equity criteria. Now, I'm sorry, that runs totally contrary to what you've sat here and told me. Totally and absolutely contrary. You're throwing away expertise, and I'm asked why, and you've told me it doesn't happen. But I've seen it with my own eyes. I've got the form. And you made some comment about you don't employ groups. Do you imagine the Democratic Alliance is going to come and apply en masse for jobs in the SAPs? I don't need a comment like that. I'm asking you for a response to a very specific question. And I've seen proof of people not people who've left the country for 100 years. I'm talking people who've resigned a few months ago, have had, in some instances, terrible circumstances. They've decided, no, I have to stay here. I want to go back to my job.
and they are turned away at the door, told because they do not fit your employment equity targets. How is that possible? You are throwing that kind of expertise away. Please answer this time.
Chairperson, I'll repeat what I said. We welcome applications from all FEMA members of the service. All such applications will be evaluated against a set criteria. I'm not aware of this specific case that has been referred to. It will be useful if we could be provided with a copy of that specific case so that we can look into it. I think I'll ask that I move on to the other questions until we are given the details on the specific matter. It is true that members who left the service have got useful skills that could help us bridge the gap that we have within the organization, and we will continuously look into each and every application on its own individual merits.
Can I just make a follow-up on this one, disciplinary cases. In fact, disciplinary cases. According to the annual report, there were 990 charges. And why 252 cases, number of disciplinary cases? 990 charges according to the report, and then 252 a disciplinary hearing.
Okay, I'll want to go to that specific page. May I ask where you are?
It's 103.
Page 103 of the report.
Yes. And page 12 of the presentation. Okay, there's a difference of 738.
Whilst still paging his book, I hope you'll not forget the benchmarking, because I think that's important, these figures he has given us. Surely, as the human resource, they have benchmarked. If you took this number, are we really, is this true, what's happening, or are we really what one would call a corrupt police service? These numbers of corruption, are we really within what is normal in other countries, or are we really a corrupt police service? Because that question he must answer, I don't think he seems to be moving away from it.
Okay, thanks. I think the 103 that you have made reference to is part of the Detective Services Program, which will be spoken to on Tuesday in the annual report. But the two on 12, that's the number of disciplinary cases. So those are, I think, I don't want to say what I'm not sure of, because they total number of cases reported, and those who have been found guilty. As I said here in the presentation, in the part of administration, I'm talking about disciplinary cases, in other words, the conduct which is unacceptable and not necessarily those. And I think somewhere you will find number of the individuals differing, but I don't want to explain something that I will not be able to answer to.
This is the report. And I want to believe that it talks to a policeman. And the figures differ from this program to the other. But it talks to one issue.
990 detected rate regarding charges of corruption against police officials. It's police officials anyway. And we are at the national level, and therefore surely you're talking about the figures ultimately that reach you at that level. Whether you are in HR or detective or visible policing or administration, wherever, but that is the number. Surely you expect that number to be one. Now you have a difference of 738. Somewhere there is under-reporting or over-reporting, but it comes from. And what do we do with this figure as a portfolio committee? Do we add this 252 to this 990, or we subtract this 252 from 990? What is this difference?
Just to add to Commissioner Botlane's confusion, if you look at the Auditor General's report, there's a third figure. So there's actually three figures. So we would love to know which one we actually got to work.
Okay, can I ask Commissioner Wilcox maybe to talk to the 900?
Thank you, Chair. If one looks at the criminal cases against members, now, those 990 are charges, which means that one person could be charged for two or more charges, or one or more charges. So it doesn't necessarily say it's 990 members that have been charged for corruption and corruption-related charges. Then, Madam Chair, this information was audited by the Auditor General, which we have supplied to the Auditor General in terms of Program 3. So the confusion at this stage may be that one looks at the number of people that has been suspended vis-a-vis the number of charges. Now, charges, as I've indicated, could be more than one. In other words, aiding and abetting somebody escaping, and a case of fraud, and a case of this, and a case of that against one member, so that it's the counts.
Thanks, Chair. I hope it clarifies the issue, because in that 12, with the number of disciplinary cases, is the number of members that we are following. If I was not clear on that one, my apologies, but I thought it's part of that other program. There was a question with...
Madam Chair, can I also test my English here? I think my English, the understanding of the English, the first sentence says number of disciplinary cases
in bracket
charges. Why didn't that number of 900 come on top as number of cases, but the personnel, that the people who have been suspended, will reflect the 252? Because to me it will make more sense if the first part, the number will be the 900. Which means it's cases. But the people who made those cases, who will be 252? But now it doesn't make sense. Your explanation doesn't make sense. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. May I proceed? Okay. There was a question related to reservists, and that is with regard to the moratorium. I will only talk to one part of that in terms of why the moratorium. We had reservists
marching to various places, to Pretoria Union Building, to Luthuli House, them demanding integration, unconditional integration, demanding that they be absorbed within the cities. We listened to their concerns, and we made an undertaking to go and do an analysis of the situation that we are confronted with. We have communicated timelines to say by December this year we will have finalized the process of screening those who qualify, who meet the requirements for enlistment purposes. Now, Chair, in our analysis, some of the things that became visible is the non-compliance if you leave that recruitment at Asian level of reservists. For example, it is expected that all reservists would have underwent a psychometric assessment. Our analysis made visible that 76% of those that we have gone through a verification process with did not do a psychometric testing. Only 24% of them did that. So the reason of putting a moratorium is to ensure the revision of the criteria, is to ensure that we put processes in place to make sure that we get reservists on board whose track record is very clear. There is, at the same time, the review of the reservist policy that I think Commissioner Lamour is able to talk to. But from an employment perspective, we should be finished by the end of December this year.
And thank you. I'm going to ask Commissioner Ndaba to respond on the career management issue, and then supply chain management will respond on the firearms and the bulletproof issuing of this.
What about the benchmarking? Talked about
not corruption.
Corruption and discipline. Unless you say you don't know, you don't. Have you never checked?
The benchmarking with other countries in terms of corruption and disciplinary issues, Mr. Muleleke, if I hear you correctly.
Yes.
That's what you are indicating. Commissioner Moorkoff can assist me there, but there was some benchmarking done in terms of the Belgian police, if my memory serves me right. Commissioner Moorkoff, you can just respond to that one, please.
Thank you, Commissioner. If I can explain what we mean in this document in terms of benchmarking in our annual report and also in the presentation, is that previously members were charged on the 1992 Act of Corruption. And because it was so difficult to prove, members were not charged with corruption but with theft, housebreaking and all those cases. Now the new Act, the 2004 Act, makes it clear what constitutes corruption. And now we don't have we have to build up, say for 1 year or 2 years to determine how many people are being charged in terms of the new Act so that we can compare it with the new Act. In terms of international benchmark, as the Commissioner indicated, with the Belgian police, because they also assisted us in the service delivery improvement programs, Chairperson, it is so, but at that stage, when we did that, the comparison made it very difficult because of the fact that we charge people, for theft and housebreaking, saying it is corruption. But it is other, criminal cases. So that made it difficult. So until such time, we have, in terms of what the new Act says, and that is what we are busy with, then we can benchmark it with other countries.
Well, the Chairperson, the question on the on whether or not we have career management quite difficult to approach this one, because I could simply say we do, and I may sound arrogant, but that's not what I intend doing, because I understand your question is actually broader than that. Yes, we have career streams within SAPS, and in the broad sense, we've got two career streams, the operational career stream as well as the support one. And within the operational one, of course, there are various fields within that. Now, the challenge that we've had or that we have in the organization is that people have been struggling between the support and the operational environment. So we've had people moving because they are pursuing career opportunities, promotion, etc. They've actually been moving from the operational environment to the support environment.
On a point of order, I mean, that's not what I've asked. Can we leave it at this? If they had career management, it should have been in the annual report. It's not in the annual report. I'm not talking about two career streams. I've asked a very specific question. In the light of time and of other questions on the table, I'm more than willing to leave this question. I will put it in writing to the minister that I can get a response from him. Thank you very much, Dave.
The issue of the crime scenes that we are attending, it's outstanding still, and the issue were relevant to firearms lost and how many were fined. And then there was also two questions relevant to the budget finances, so I'm just going to ask them to respond briefly on those outstanding matters. The IT one, I can respond on that one. We are part of the development committee of the JCPS cluster, and we interact on a monthly basis with them so that the systems can speak to one another.
For demand. Why I'm asking this question, Madam Chair? It's nice to say we full utilization of the budget, but what I've seen in the last 10 so years, whenever you go to police stations, you find that the manner in which resources of the police service are distributed, it's so badly skewed that it makes the work of the police very difficult. You go to the township, there are no vans. You go to the village, it's wet. Every time you phone the police, they were waiting for a van. Somebody's being killed. That is why I'm asking, do you get value for the money which you owe? It's nice to say you've utilized it 100%. Is it properly utilized?
We will respond to all the questions. In terms of the value for money, if you look at the presentation that we have presented, as well as the objectives in terms of our strategic plan, our focuses are on those areas. And I think we have achieved a lot. But we also are continuously trying to improve our service delivery at the stations. It's easy for people to say there is no vehicles available, but we have a vehicle fleet that is more than enough to attend to the complaints. Yeah, the numbers are there. So we are really trying our level best to improve our performance in terms of the budget that has been allocated to us. And we focus the allocation in terms of our strategic objectives in the organization. Jay, if you will allow me.
I mean, Commissioner, when you say you have a vehicle fleet that is more than enough, then I panic, really. Because for me, where I come from, there aren't vehicles. There aren't. There are no vehicles where I come from. And when the department at this level says we have more than enough, then the question of the Honorable Mluleke Jordi is so relevant. The distribution of those more than enough vehicles, it's very, very relevant. Is it skewed? Is it that it goes to one area and it doesn't go to other areas? Because where I come from, there aren't vehicles. Go to any of those police stations up there in the mountain when you go to Swaziland.
there aren't vehicles? And how are you distributing them if you have more than enough? I mean, really. Then it's very relevant. How are you doing it? How are you monitoring the distribution of these vehicles?
Jefferson, maybe I confused you to say it's more than enough. We have, as you've indicated in our report, 40,000 vehicles at the end of March 2009. And it has increased already again. I think it's more or less 41,000 something now. Yes. So there is an increase in the vehicles. The distribution of the vehicles lies with the relevant provincial commissioners. So it's the responsibility of the provincial commissioners to ensure that vehicles are distributed in terms of their needs in the provinces. So if there is a specific station where there is no vehicle, because in my mind there can't be a station that has no vehicle. It might be a problem that some of the vehicles are in the garages and therefore the vehicles are not available. But there is mechanisms to being put in place to make sure that people are in a position to attend to crime scenes.
This story of the provinces,
still the chairperson.
Oh, sorry, Madam Chair. The story that the distribution is by provinces worries me, because this is the story which is repeated. But you are the management, and I have not heard that the police service is federalized. So it's still a unitary structure. Why do you keep on giving this? What are you doing about the provinces? Because it seems your provinces are not, if you say there are enough vehicles in the provinces, it means the provinces are not distributing them properly. What are you doing about that as the management of SARS?
Thank you.
So I think also when we talk about value for money, we're talking about more than just the distribution of resources.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. We talk about results.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a graph that Treasury gave us. Mm-hmm. Now, we'll deal with it when we get to detective services next week. But the fact of the matter is, in the end, it is about reaching the crime-fighting targets. That's what it's about. And with all due respect, we haven't done that. And I think then the question of the chairperson and Mr. George, are we using our resources effectively? We spent 7 years to finalize a policy on what is supposed to be the pillar of fighting crime sector policing. And we are a country with more than just the priority of fighting crime. We've got education. We've got health. We need to create jobs. SAP's budget are increasing on a year-to-year basis more than any other department. You make out the biggest chunk of the budget. Is the South African taxpayer, is the responsibility that we have here as parliamentarians and you as senior managers, are we getting value for money? Treasury thinks not. That's their comment.
I just want also to read this one. The National Commissioner must exercise control, that is the Constitution, control over and manage the police service in accordance with the National Policing Policy and the directions of the Cabinet member responsible for policing. The provincial commissioners are responsible for policing in their respective provinces as prescribed by national legislation and subject to the power of the National Commissioner to exercise control over and manage the police service in terms of subsection 2, the one that I read earlier. I just want to say there's no way you're going to shift the blame. None. You cannot. Not for SAPS. This is a real national responsibility. For that matter, it is even a parliamentary responsibility, so you can't shift the blame.
Chair, if I might try to respond, I'm not shifting the blame to the provincial commissioners. We are all aware of the fact that we are a national police department. So the national commissioner has the responsibility to meet with the provincial commissioners on a regular basis, which we did. And at that management forum meetings of ours, they must come and account if they have not reached their targets in terms of the targets that we have set in our annual performance plan. So on a continuous basis, the national office, as well as that is also the role of the divisional commissioners, to monitor whether they are in fact or indeed complying with the targets that we have set in this regard. So we have also entered into performance agreements with the relevant provincial commissioners to ensure that we meet these targets on a regular basis, and they are being performed against the organizational performance and the program one have to support the operational issues in the organization. So on a regular basis, we do evaluations from national level to make sure that our people do get value for money at the end of the day. Because it's a huge amount, as the honorable members have indicated, that has been allocated to the police service. And it's our responsibility to utilize that money in a responsible and an accountable manner in terms of the Constitution as well as the Police Service Act.
Thank you, Acting National Commissioner. Let me say, I was not a member of this police, of this portfolio committee. When the former National Commissioner Jackie Sleep said you have more than enough vehicles, I was elsewhere, but I heard that message. And it cannot be true that even today we're talking about the distribution of vehicles. And it can't be that we are informed by your good self that you call provincial commissioners. That we are saying this is because the distribution is not fair. It's skewed. It doesn't talk to what you are saying. It doesn't at all. And that is why we think it's a matter that needs your attention as a national office, because we repeatedly say this. I want to believe that the former portfolio committee must have said this several times, because like I'm saying, I heard about it and I was shocked, because even if I was not in the portfolio committee, I was shocked to hear that the national commissioner is saying you have more than enough vehicles when where I come from, the aunt. But if you go up there in the mountains towards Swaziland, you don't get any. Even those that are there, it's small cars, Toyota. And they're not drivable there. I just want to say this, that we're saying it again, that the distribution of vehicles is good. It doesn't talk to the work that you are doing, the purchasing of all those vehicles. The distribution is not talking to that. And it needs you to attend to it. And I want to believe that as we proceed, we'll have to get information that you are indeed, in fact, you have attended to it, that we can get information that is saying at least you have. But more than that, those that are there are abused. They are forever in state garages because nobody is held accountable. Those policemen that are using these cars are not held accountable. When these cars are in state garages for years, days, and months, a person who abused this is abusing another car. And when you go to the police station, you are told by the same person that we don't have any car, we don't have any vehicle, because he wants a vehicle to take a girlfriend and a friend and a relative to go to Checkers and purchase whatever. I think these things we've been saying, and people are saying these things over and over and over and over again, and nobody is being disciplined for that. Managers are not disciplined for failing to manage.
That's what you're saying. I think the point is, we believe that we have dedicated men and women doing the job in the street. All of them, not, there are some bad apples within this case. But our problem comes in with management. And we've been saying this over and over and over again. In this report, the resource allocation guide was not available. It says it. That's why an indicator couldn't have been met. You, from subside in the report, say performance management is fine. The Auditor General says it's not. That's management issues. Service delivery have been established at provincial, national, and divisional level. Where does service delivery take place? It takes place at station level. It's management issues. And that is what we've been trying to say all along. Chair, when we criticize SAPS, we're not criticizing the people who are doing the work. What we want to know is, what is management doing? They're getting paid a huge salary. What are they doing to make sure that we get... What are they doing to make sure that we get those people down on the street doing the work, that they are actually getting the support that they are supposed to be getting?
I want to say, let's it's time now. It's 25 to. Let's just break 40, 10 minutes. When we come back, we will take Mr. Ndlovu's question as number one.
My three questions.
And he will ask his questions, then you will respond to his questions, including those questions that have not been answered right now. Let's start with that. Yes.
Thank you.